Welcome to the Inner Leader Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Tran, and I'm here to serve your highest purpose on this planet, discovering who you are and what you are meant to do. Each week, I will bring to you conversations that will elevate your mind, deepen your awareness, and expand your heart to help you unlock your inner leader. Before we dive in, make sure you subscribe to our podcast to tune in on the daily. Without further ado, let's get started. Let me introduce to you to our inner leader of this week, Terry Sidhu. Terry Sidhu is a founder of Van City Life Coach, a meditation teacher. His mission is to evolve the human experience and help people realize their true potential. He teaches transcendental meditation to chakras cleansing, tantric meditation, and cannabis meditation for people from all walks of life in Nelson, British Columbia, Canada. Terry has a profound impact on many lives, which is why I wanted to bring Terry on the show today for you guys. Terry is a phenomenal life coach. He has a lot of wisdom and insight to share about life in this episode. What I love the most about Terry is his incredible insight into the human's journey, understanding of human psychology, his vulnerability, and his fun personality. You will hear us laughing a lot throughout this episode. In this episode, you will get the chance to tune in into Terry's story from the beginning of his journey to when he discovered his truth and living his truth. You will tune in to our conversation full of depth, laughter, and friendship. My purpose of this conversation is to help you elevate your mind, deepen your awareness, and expand your heart to help you unlock your inner leader. Without further ado, let's welcome Terry.
This journey, I suppose the more appropriate time where I can associate or attribute that that moment is when I was working in England, and it was a good job and it paid well and it had so many prospects, like everything you'd want just after you graduated university. But then I don't know, after like the second month, it was that soon, realizing how much my life was just a repetition. It was just like a process of in and out, like very robotic my actions were. I slowly started to fade away, and I could feel myself fading away. And if I'm very honest with you, I'd be like driving in my car and thinking like, what would happen if I just kind of like smashed into the barrier right now? Like, you don't realize how dark your mind is going in that process, and you just dismiss it as a creative thought. But when it starts happening more regularly, you're like, okay, this isn't right. I shouldn't be feeling like this. I should be encouraged to be navigating myself into this life that I'm building, or whatever I'm contributing to. So I took that as a very significant wake-up call that I shouldn't feel anything but eagerness to live my life, I think. Like that enthusiasm or gusto, that energy to be like, I'm alive. I want to be able to do something wonderful with it. So when I realized that wasn't happening, I was like, fuck it, I'm going to quit and I'm going to figure out what I got to do. And I was too young to be feeling that way, in my opinion.
How old were you when you were feeling that way?
Probably around 23, I want to say. Yeah, because it was just after university, so 22, 23. And it wasn't that long of a, like, as soon as I felt it, as soon as that thought crept into my mind, like I said, it was just about 2 months in. I knew it. Something had to change, because I'd never felt like that in my life necessarily. You know, even when I was younger, meditating and stuff, and mom teaching me about yoga and navigating my life, you know, very consciously, to realize myself slowly switching off and start looking forward to something else that isn't in the realm of life, then yeah, just wake up to that. It was literally a transition from living my life and gaining so many wondrous experiences to, at the beginning, work was very exciting. I was very eager to please. And then slowly, as the weeks went by, I mean, I was very good at my job. I was constantly getting praised, and it wasn't resonating. It wasn't sitting with me. Nothing I felt that I was doing, I felt very connected to. And I realized I wasn't even enjoying my role, my education. the marketing. I wasn't using it the way I intended to use this knowledge. I mean, I went into university to learn marketing so that I could understand, you know, where's this applied psychology? You know, what psychology is being used to convince people to buy things that they don't need? And so I was curious as to what the operation was. And then when I went into a job, I was doing exactly that, you know, getting people to buy shit they didn't need. And I was like, what? Yeah, and I think I realized I completely submitted my life to a role, to attaining something that was going to supposed to fulfill my self-esteem, to make me feel good, to make my parents happy, to make everything about my investment I just made prosperous, to be like, look at me type of thing. I'm doing well. I'm fitting in. I'm living life. Everything opposite to how I started out, you know, being creative and open and free and learning what my value is and learning what my virtue will be, you know, where I can harness all this energy that I feel into something productive. So I just knew I needed to kind of experience more life. I needed to really delve into an experience that actually felt healthy.
What did you do after you quit your job?
After I quit my job, I had a little bit of a plan. I wanted to go I'd done a little bit of traveling prior, and I decided I wanted to go back into that and just see the world a little bit and experience a little bit of life before if this is what life is about, if this job was what I had to do to survive through this world, then between now and going back, coming back to this, I want to have some more experiences to draw on, some more life to have been lived. Because at some point, you know, you see what's going out in the world at a certain age, you're supposed to have everything in place. So I just knew, I was like, I'm at that age, I need to explore. And so my sister actually switched me on to Canada. She was talking about Canada and wanting to move there herself. And with their visas that were available and the working holiday visas, it was possible for me. I was the right age. I had the right skills. I could make it happen. Got the visa. And then I didn't even tell my parents until 2 weeks of me flying out too that I was quitting my job and I'm like moving away, because that pressure, right, from your parents, because, you know, I come from a very working class background. So, you know, if one of your kids graduated, got a degree and now is earning decent money and look at being able to like take care of himself and start taking care of the family, to make a decision like that felt so selfish for one. You know, it felt very difficult to make. So I was really scared to tell my parents, like, hey, I'm going to give up this prosperous direction to go fuck around in Canada. it's mad, really. So I was a little afraid to tell them. But they were very encouraging. I think when they realized, I didn't tell them the depth of what I was feeling. I wouldn't say it was a dire situation. Like I exaggerate it, I think, when I retell the story. It was just my mind would go into a space where it'd be like, this will be more exciting to do this than to go to this job right now. Smashing my car into that tree will bring me more excitement in this life than actually going to stand in a position that makes me feel as if I'm just not even a full, but like not the full version of myself, like a very structured version to satisfy someone else and fill their pockets, so to speak. But yeah, so I was like, yeah, I don't even know where we're going on this conversation with this question, but it tends to happen when I'm trying to relive a memory and trying to explain what happened in that memory. That's my life. That's how I communicate, apparently. I'll get better. But yes, parents and not telling them, not having the guts to tell them, again, is because of that weight, that pressure. But when I presented the enthusiasm of what I'm about to embark on, going to Canada, just trying it out, see what's there, find a job, look at the, like, I did a lot of research before I made my move. So being able to come at them with every angle. So any question they had, I was like well prepared with that. And giving that energy, like showing the excitement, this is what I want to do. And I love my parents for not stopping me or ever feeling discouraged. I mean, people around them would make me feel discouraged. Like, oh, you should be doing this, this and this. But when my parents realized that I'm pursuing something that's coming from my heart, they never, ever stopped me. And to this day, that's one of the most things I'm grateful for.
Not everyone has. So beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think for me, like, I can relate to that. My parents are also Asian and they do have that expectation of me like finishing school. Actually, the other day I was on a call with my grandma and she said, I will not die. I'm laughing as I'm saying this, but she said, I will not die until you graduate university.
No pressure, Gran.
And,
But it's a lot. I mean, one thing I want everyone, anyone listening to this, to understand right now, if someone's putting their life and death in your hands, tell them that that's what they're doing, and that's too much pressure to be able to say, like, you can't put your life and what your life means on mine, you know? That's essentially what's happening. And I think us young people, as the next generation, we need to educate our parents out of the cycle that they've been fed. This is one of the key roles to being a young person. Look, I see all the protests in the street. I see all these wonderful things the kids are doing in the media. Social media, and like especially in the music scene and the art scene, or even the generally in anywhere that's creative, you see what people are bringing out. And it's so beautiful. It's like a colorful place to be. And if your parents are getting in the way of that, then we need to educate them. We need to work together. And like, one piece of advice, and I'm going to do this throughout this podcast, by the way, is offer a little advice, because I want young people to hear this. Work together. Like, for example, if you're LGBTQ, whatever label you want to adopt, and you need to come out to your parents, get your friends to help you out. You work together. You need a community to help, like a force of like a family behind you as you're going. There are people out there you can talk to. If you want to take a creative route, you know, get your people to support you, people who listen to your music, be like, yeah, he's got something, you know, show that you are out there making friends and living your life in the world and building a future with this. It'll work wonders. Work together, make it happen. Your lives can be incredible, I promise you.
That's wonderful that you're bringing that up, because I see a lot of young kids, and we're so creative now because of the power of social media and all of the platforms and tools that we can use to just create and like have fun.
Yeah, social media, I mean, learn how to use it to express yourself. Like, I use my social media mainly for my work, but you'll notice all my work and everything I like to do is just to offer advice and the education that I can bring based on my experiences that can help people navigate through their lives. Anything I'm doing in my life remains in my life. I'm living it with my friends. We text each other, we call each other, we talk over Skype, and we can't talk all the time, but my life is my life, and what I'm presenting in social media is an aspect of other things I do to live it. It's just lessons. It's like, I want people to encourage to be themselves. I think the moment I start sharing more of my life, and I do share tidbits here and there, I don't want anyone to ever feel as if they have to live this life that I'm living. You know, it's not about privacy. I'm a complete open book, as you can tell within, what, 15 minutes of this conversation. I have nothing to hide. But I would like people, if based on what the things that they're learning about me and through other people and the experiences and the energy that I put out into the world, at least my social media be like, well, this is how I'm doing it. Other people do it with fashion, and other people do it with art, making jewelry and showing those pictures, showing pictures of their work to show, like, look at the energy and heart that I put into this. This is my life. And that's what I love about artists and social media, is if you're going to use it to really authenticate yourself. Like, be the person that you want to create in the world. Be the energy or the force of change, if you will. I just didn't want to quote Gandhi. So I had to change that direction.
I was reading one of your blog posts, I believe, and you talk about coming to the truth of who we are and exist in our dharma, like our own nature. So could you expand a little bit on that? Like, what is, who am I? I don't even know who I am.
You know? Yeah, well, definitely not my job to tell you who you are. By the way, if you're ever hiring a life coach, if they're trying to tell you who you are and how you should be, fire them immediately. Throw that in there too. Get everyone, make sure you're hiring the right people who are encouraging you to exist in your dharma, exist into your true self. So think of dharma less about purpose, more about being. As in, right, if I'm asking you, Lindsay, to exist in your dharma, I'm asking you to basically show up in your truth, be who you are, express your truth, dance your truth, draw your truth. My truth comes out in my teachings, my work, my ability to communicate large constructs into bite-sized pieces that people can adopt and understand and kind of grow and develop and aid their own research and inquiry. When you're existing in your dharma, your true self is coming out. It's almost, that's how you exist in the present state of mind, how you exist in this space that we call life. Because think of it like your spirit really shining through your body, and you're both in awe of the experience that you're having in this human physical vessel. We're going really spiritual with this, hey? And basically that you are in that unionship between that metaphysical and physical space. Like in your mind, everything that you're connecting to feels and is true. Everything that you adopt, there's no questioning in your mind. There's no real playing by itself. There's no story that's being completed. It's just existing in all the knowledge, and everything that is taking place within that metaphysical space is honest and true and accept. So that gets reflected in the body. And so your actions are reflecting your truth. So you're navigating to now people who embrace you for that truth. That's another thing about standing into who you are and being true to yourself, is if you're scared to be yourself, it's because you're around maybe around the wrong types of people. Maybe you're surrounding yourself with the wrong messages and you're adopting those messages over and over again. Maybe it's coming from your parents and it's going to be even harder to actually break free, right? So being yourself is the most sensible way to operate, because you start connecting with the things that you need in your life in order to encourage and grow into that. You know, once you've found truth, it's just about growing it and expanding it like a ball of energy, just growing and expanding in the world. And when you exist as true to who you are, true to how you need to be, to just, I always say, liken the whole world to a playground, and you're now navigating through. If you have to be a certain way just to play, then you're always going to feel as if you don't belong in that group or in that clan. You're always going to have to put on this character in order to play. That's going to make life extremely difficult. So start learning to be true to who you are, exist in your Dharma, and you will find the people and the connections and the virtues and the energy and the places that allow you to play the way you want to play, the way that you know how to play and that how you love to play. And then, well, the life just gets a lot easier after that. It's a stumbling at the beginning, because you're undoing a lot of ways that you've naturally operated in. But it takes time, and you will slowly start building that courage and confidence to actually just exist, and to a point where it's like, doesn't require courage and confidence anymore. It's just common sense. And once you can get to that level in that metaphysical space of yours, oh, life is just easier there.
You know, I heard this quote recently, and it was, your being is, you just can't help but be. Like, you can't help it. You just are. Mm-hmm. And I think that really touches on what you're saying, that when you get to that state, that you can't help but you just be yourself and expand your truth. Mm-hmm. It's liberation.
Exactly. Moksha. That's what it is. It's liberating yourself from the experience of life. So in a way, to say that what everyone's deemed to be life and what life has to be, you liberated from that sense. And now you are now the creator of life. That's what you are becoming in that state. You are becoming a creator of your own version, of your own reality, of your own choosing. And this is where manifestation and all that comes into play when we're talking in terms of spiritual play. And even like in the life coaching realm, you know, they don't hold those ideas of law of attraction and envisioning where you want to be in life and all of that. That basically gets replaced with this idea of, okay, this is where that energy is going to grow. This is the direction it needs to go in order to liberate more of this truth that's coming in and that I'm feeling and existing. Like, you know how to grow then, because you know what you need to maintain, what type of life needs to be built in order to continue existing in this true version of self. And so you do, you start building it. You may not be exactly, you know, and you may realize, you know, working to become a really rich billionaire and getting well known in the world probably isn't the right way to exist in your truth. Maybe it just means living more of a humble experience, or taking care of your immediate responsibilities and really enjoying the experience and absorbing as much of it as you can. In my experience, in my truth, it's all about, okay, I've got this great way to communicate, and it engages a lot of people to be more honest and open with themselves, to see the common sense in it. And I feel that it's a great direction for me to go in, because it feels so natural and easy. There's very little preparation work that needs to go in. It's just, I get to exist as is, and therefore my life feels like an easy, blissful experience. No one's in charge of what I should be creating. I'm creating it all. So so you read, and then you're very careful with the people and the energies that you invite in as well, because you want to co-create a wonderful experience. You don't want to just be the only one building this thing. There's other people doing it in different ways. And you start realizing how connected and similar we all are as people. Like, look at me and you, very different backgrounds, similar maybe experiences here and there, but generally most people I connect with on paper, we shouldn't really connect. But when truth is at play, you be pushed beyond all of that subconscious context that tells you what this person is and perceives as thought direction. All that's gone. And it's just a great conversation and a great experience to be had.
Why do you think that we can't seem to connect with each other on our differences? Like, why is that so hard? Yesterday, I had a group meeting at school, and we had this project that we had to finish in like 2 days. So the stress was pretty high and the pressure was on. I guess half of the team really value results driven. They're like, okay, like we got to get this done and it doesn't really matter. Just everybody get shit done. Like, doesn't yeah. matter. Just we got to get this shit done. And then for me, I was looking at it from a different angle. Mm-hmm. I saw that the group, like, we weren't really communicating well. People were having these internal conflicts and we kind of projecting conflicts and anger and stress to each other in the group. So then I was like, hey guys, like, can we have a conversation? Like, can we try to work in a way that's collaborative? And people were like, what do you mean collaboration? We have no time to collaborate right now. Like, we gotta get this shit done. In those times, and I guess that's just one scenario of differences, mm-hmm. Or we seem so different. Why do you think it's so hard for us to bridge our differences?
I think for a lot of the time, a lot of us have learned how to survive within them. This is where you start going into childhood experiences and what you've learned about life and how to survive. So where you place most, like, to keep yourself going and keep yourself existing in the way that you have to exist, on the way that you've essentially been taught from a very young age, that becomes hardwired, you know? And so in certain situations, if getting something done required leaving the emotions at the door to get it done, then that's how what you're going to fight for, because that's how you know. There's no alternative narrative, perhaps, that's been presented. That's just one scenario. Another one could be, you know, this is my identity. This is who I am because that's what I've been taught. This is how you get through life. And this is touching on what I've just said before. And everything else is wrong. I've invested most of my time and life into operating this way. Therefore, how you're saying it and how you're saying it is not going to get it done. It's a sense of stubbornness, because think of it like making an investment all your life, and you've made an investment into this identity, this person, this way of operation, because it's what you've seen growing up and it's what you've what's got you to this point here in time. So you're going to rely on it to take you further. So when we operate with life with those blinders on, yeah, there's going to be constant conflict, because anyone who's showing you an alternative way of being, an alternative way of existing, or a different narrative that's completely different to your own, it's going to be butting heads, like, no, that's not the way to survive, this is. And so I always find it really comes from that process. But what happens is, at some point, everyone has their breaking point and they need that person to talk to. Mm. And that's what we need to train each other to do more. We need to train ourselves to be able to just speak our truth, not in a reactive way, because you'll notice when people start really explaining about their truths and start talking about how they're feeling, it's usually by a point of where they're about to break. So it comes out in aggression, mm-hmm. or it comes out in tears and pressure. Like, why do we have to be pushed to our limits to be honest?
Wow, you're just like spitting fire.
That's why, like, you'll notice I stumbled getting to that conclusion, because the answer comes into my head sometimes and I can't articulate it there and then. And when we're recording in a state like this, I'm like, it'll come to me if I just keep rifting, and then boom, it's I apologize if I go on rants. It'll happen here and there. You'll learn to accept it.
We already talked about, like, if this turns out to be 5 hours, we'll let it be.
So. You have to do it in parts. We're only half an hour in. We haven't even crossed that mark yet. We're all right. We're on good time.
I was also reading another blog post that you wrote that I thought was very interesting. So you talked about reality is an illusion, or a video that you made, reality is an yes. illusion, and you're talking about Maya. So I've been thinking about that recently, mm-hmm. but I don't think I've grasped anything that you've said. So could you help me understand?
My apologies. So Maya, reality as an illusion. So stick with me on this one. What I want you to do right now, and I think the best way to explain this space is to kind of guide a meditation, if that's okay with you.
Oh, that's okay. Amazing. I love it.
What I want you to do is close your eyes. Right, inhale and exhale through the nose. Just engage a healthy, controlled breath. Then when you feel a little state of calm, and what you can do as well is put your hand on your heart or feel your pulse and see if you can get a nice controlled breath in sync with your heart. So like a certain amount of heartbeats for an inhale, a certain amount of heartbeats for an exhale. What feels healthy to you? So get that breath started. I'm just going to give you 30 seconds to figure that. So I'll breathe with you. Now, what I want everyone to do is roll your eyes up towards the center of your eyebrows or towards your forehead. But it's important, don't strain. So if you're straining, relax your eyes a little. Just gently roll your eyes up. Continue that breath, that inhale and exhale. I want you to visualize yourself entering like a white space. To quote, like kind of like that scene in The Matrix, you know, where it's just completely white and they're just creating anything in it. So imagine yourself existing in this room or white light space, and there's no, you can't really tell where the walls start and the floors end, just white blank space. I want you just to pull up a recent memory, any memory at all. You know, what did you have for lunch today? Put yourself in that scenario. And what I want you to do is shatter that illusion. Shatter the illusion completely and exist again in that white space. So this is like a concept of Maya, where that white space we can put as that's your conscious stage. This is your moment. This is the metaphysical space that you operate in. And when we exhale, we breathe energy from this metaphysical space out into this physical world that we exist in. And every time we inhale, we bring in that physical energy and we feed this metaphysical space, this white room that we've created. Maya is essentially basically that whatever we've created in this white space, in this conscious stage, is being projected out into the world. Therefore, it's elusive. Like if I ask you to start thinking of something beautiful and nice, think about how you want to exist, right, in the world. And that's what's filling your that conscious space, this white stage. Then that's what you're going to be breathing out into the world around you. So your version of reality is going to be more blissful. But let's just say you have traumas now and a lot of subconscious context that's just automatically sitting itself into this space. You've not been meditating, so you've not been clearing this space up. It's just been on running on autopilot. So everything you learn about life and yourself is coming through the subconscious mind. Oh, by the way, you can open your eyes now. I'm explaining the instruction.
Oh, okay.
I forget to mention that. I was just demonstrating the first space. So this white space that you entered in meditate, if you're without conscious control, it's just subconscious context, your memories and experiences are just basically creating your version of reality, and that's what you're projecting on the world. And this is just one concept to explain Maya. So think about it. If you're, what's in your mind is a happy and healthy space, then the world around you is going to be a happy and healthy experience. If your mind is set on a very aggressive, angry state or resented state, yeah, your world's going to be a very different experience. If you have hate in your mind, then hate is going to exist out here in the world. So that's what we mean by Maya, is that constantly the world around us is being shaped based on what's existing in this conscious space. And what we're doing in meditation now is we're learning to manage what goes on, what projection are we putting out there. We are in charge of our reality. It's kind of like a film that we put over this physical experience. And shattering illusions is basically shattering that idea that that this is where the world is, and recreating and reconstructing a new metaphysical space so that we can recreate a new version of Maya, one that we can exist in. And, you know, essentially, I mean, why we would create it and all of that, I don't want to spoil too many surprises. It's nice to kind of figure that out in your own meditations. But really think about it. How have you been taught to operate this conscious space of yours? Are you even in control of it? This is why we say reality is completely elusive. I mean, you can get to depths where you start realizing that, okay, we exist in three key realms of consciousness. So, for example, when I asked you to relive a memory, for example, you've got to realize that that memory no longer exists. You physically existed at one point like this, but you're literally going into a storage unit and picking up an image, a picture, essentially. And you're using that energy and you're feeding that memory energy. So it's having an impact of how you experience life out here. But if we detach from that, and realize, oh, that is a very elusive thing. There's an exercise I do with my clients to demonstrate this, for example. So what's in front of you right now, Lindsay? Like, is there anything, something in front of you that you can describe?
I have a water bottle.
Okay.
It's tall. It's about like an arm length. I drink a lot of water. It's clear.
Okay.
It has a round cap.
Okay.
Purple color. Yeah.
Close your eyes.
Okay.
Think of that water bottle. So okay. The experience of that water bottle, you had a conscious experience in the physical realm with this water bottle, and the experience has traveled now into your memory. When I ask you to close your eyes and think of that, you are now pulling in from memory and bringing the water bottle into essentially life, giving it life. It exists in your mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I ask you to pull in a different realm of energy, take that water bottle into a creative space. If I'm going to just reel off a bunch of things, change the color of the water bottle, give it legs, give it arms, create a world for it, and now bring that water bottle back into the conscious center of your mind. I mean, at the moment you look at your water bottle, open your eyes and look at your water bottle, you can
oh my God.
You can project the image on the water bottle, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, fucking elusive. So
my walking water bottle.
But like, I mean, that's just like a demonstration. But if you think about now all the different conscious realms that we exist in, all the deep traumatic memories, all the anxieties navigating us into dire and dystopian futures, if all of that's on autopilot, that's what's being projected out on the world constantly. So we can hack that experience with meditation. That's why I invested so much time and energy creating my practice, because coaching wasn't going to get people to the experiences that meditation can, I assure you. Coaching's like coming after that experience, I think now.
What are the different benefits that coaching or meditation brings?
Mm-hmm.
How are they different? Yeah.
I started working on coaching. When I first started out coaching, I was really helping people navigate their lives into fulfillment, putting life plans together and really structuring their experience of life based on the visions that they wanted for themselves. And the deeper and deeper I got into coaching and the better I got at it, I started realizing that it's not the... Like, I don't feel comfortable helping people figure out a system to navigate into a world that really isn't serving them healthily, you know? So I started growing into helping people figure out themselves and understand who they are as individuals. And with coaching, I've realized it's all about when you've come to a point of awareness in your life, an understanding of yourself, and you're ready to take that forward, then yeah, coaching will be very beneficial for you. And I love coaching people at that stage. And that's where I think that's where coaches should come in, not anywhere prior to that. And where meditation is concerned, it's about helping people get to that point. So the both, I feel, have equal value. I feel one's kind of working more in the metaphysical realm, and coaching, like life coaching, is working more with the body in the physical realm and moving that forward. Like, let's look at what exists in this world and how we can navigate through this experience in a blissful and healthier state, whereas meditation is all about getting the intention and all of the meta work, all the mind work in place first, getting a good sense, a solid sense of self, and then move forward. I mean, I do still feel like they're equally going, but I've been coaching now for so many years, it's time to give meditation more energy, and hopefully both careers or both actions that I've taken, I've noticed they are starting to meet each other now. Like, we do integration sessions and then we add a little bit of like goal setting and organization to one's, to people's lives.
I'm curious, from your meditation, I know you've been meditating since you were a kid, right? With your mom, you said?
Yep.
So I guess to share a bit of my experience so that the audience can understand, the first time that I started meditating meditating seriously, I guess, was in 2018 when I did my first 10-day silent retreat at the Vipassana Center. And for me, life after that changed a lot in the sense that I guess it was at that point I had taken on a tool that I have never thought it, like I never knew existed before, in terms of learning about self-awareness. And so life has shifted since then. But recently, this summer, I went on 3 months traveling, but like a 1 month silent meditation retreat, also with Vipassana. And then after that, I kind of like went into this space of liberating yourself from your deep traumas, kind of strip away a lot of the certain like identities or like attachments that you have put on yourself. So I'm just curious to hear about your experience with meditation, and like what are some identities that you have liberated yourself from?
Ooh, that's a great question. We're very well done. That's an excellent question. There's very few times that people ask me questions and I'm like blown away by the question. But that's a very good question. What identities have I detached myself from? Oh, now we're opening a can of worms here. Oh, Lindsay. Okay, let me think. One, for example, where I felt, I mean, this one is probably more coming from a young age and what would most people probably resonate with is one where you're putting up all these material possessions as a sense of my value. And my identity was soaked in basically, I had to be better than every single one of you. I have to excel above every single one of you. I am higher than thee. And that sat with detaching from that was the hardest thing because it really meant going into my experiences and the connections and the type of life I've experienced, hang on, let me reframe that more clearly. It meant going back into my experiences of life where I was essentially an asshole and admitting that and connecting to that point of my mistake and ignorance and then forgiving myself. You know, that whole process alone was not easy to detach from because you really have to reach into the depths of recognizing yourself and your behaviors. And then only then, can you then start exploring comfortably and safely and with a lot of wisdom, I suppose, how that happened. So looking at the male role models in my life, looking at the friends that I felt I had to make in life, you know, really constructing my life based on what I saw around me and the men around me because they were taught the same thing. And then you start throwing in messages and media starts coming into play and you realize how much this was reinforced. So that was definitely one of those identities. Another identity, for example, as I started getting more versed into the spiritual realm, you could, and people, like, even to this day, I get wonderful messages from just people in different parts of the world, people who I've connected with, people who I've worked with, and, you know, with thank yous and Terry, you're this. And even just earlier today, a friend says, you know, I like it how people find it very difficult to define who you are. You're so unique. And not letting that get to my head, you know, allowing yourself just to play with life and realizing where roles are probably more significant than others and just being in complete control of your creation, right? The ego is so, like, remember that conscious space is essentially your ego. If it's full of shit, you're going to be full of shit and you're going to be presenting shit all around the world, you know, everywhere you go. And so it really meant clearing that conscious space and making my ego clear and pure as I possibly could. So that I could navigate more honestly through this experience and let the experience guide me a little bit. Because what will happen is every single experience you have out here in the physical world is going through this conscious space into your memory. So it has to pass through you. It has to, you know, if that makes any sense, it's before it goes into storage, it has to interact with you. And if we're constantly letting it just sit there and not process or evaluate what we just experienced, it could literally sit there for years and years and years and years. The next thing you know, your ego is just full of shit like that you don't need. You know, that's not serving you or anyone else out there. So clearing that space, that's what it means, really. Any identity that I adopted, it was me trying on different memories, different experiences, putting it all together and trying out life. When I realized, wait, I should just stop with the roles and start clearing this space out completely. And I was getting into deep meditations at this point. So I was like clearing out this space completely to a point where I was like, wow, every experience is new now. Every experience has time to actually bounce around in my mind and dance around with who I am and what it's about and how much I can show up for it, how much this memory, like you can just measure the energy coming in and out. It's really hard for me to explain sometimes, but yeah, that the ego can be a beautiful space to exist in. You just need to keep it balanced and healthy. You need to keep the flow of energy in a state of flow. You know, not letting anything sit there too long until it starts like growing like mold in your conscious space. And now that's how you operate. That's why I honestly think if we start meditating a lot more, we could really start doing the reverse on the increase of depression and anxiety. You know, we can put that in reverse. not stopping it, but reversing it. And I think it's probably more sustainable doing it that way, because then we can learn of the tools and what we need to put in place should we ever get to a point where we've got this rapid increase in mental health issues. You know, mm-hmm. So by learning of meditation and learning how to reverse it, we're writing a rule book of what not to do to get back into that state again, what to look out for, rather than going like, take this pill, shut it, numb it down, do this, do that. No, man, just listen to your mind and what it's trying to tell you, and you'll be able to figure a lot of shit out. It's all there. Information's there. I don't know where we went with this tangent, but there you go.
I love it. I think you explain it so beautifully. How deep were you into your meditation at this point?
There was the first point of meditation where I picked up where I left off, it felt, was when I started letting go of the ego and started actually realizing, no, I'm not better than anybody else. I'm the same, you know. And then fortunately, it was at the early stages of my coaching company. So I was able to kind of put health and growth in. Like, I went from trying to build a massive following to just doing my job. Like, things like that were changing quite rapidly. Look at my Instagram. It's not got millions of followers, but a lot of the people who follow me, the people who I connect with on social media, they've met me. We've connected. They want to learn more about me and I them. It's a beautiful way to operate now. And I'm working, you know, there's nothing elusive about my lifestyle now. That was the first time. And then the second time was when I started kicking up the spiritual. So the deeper meditations were, now I'm clearing all this subconscious space. I'm really starting to detach from all the stuff behind me that's navigating my life. And to the point where my spirit is now caught up with my body. I'm here now. Then it meant being creative. And that started stimulating more confidence and trust within myself. And so that, outside in the physical world, and to help me deepen my meditation practice to a point of learning about now how energy centers work, like chakras, learning about the Om symbol, the three states of consciousness that we can operate in, understanding concepts like Maya and Samadhi in a new way, you know, being able to communicate it with the experiences that I've had, you know, as opposed to communicating it from the original source text, you know, communicating it from within. And that's when it started going into really deep spaces of learning how to manifest and tantric energy. Oh, let's talk about tantra, because that stuff is really fun and wild.
I wanted to follow up with you on that. Like, what are the three stages of consciousness that you're referring to?
So do that exercise we did with the water bottle.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first state of consciousness, or the conscious realm that you are operating. Think of it like, okay, imagine you're this little conscious ball of energy. And let's call this conscious energy Atma. Atma in Sanskrit is energy, spirit, soul. Think, you know, that the conscious self that keeps the body alive, or that lives inside your body. So now, for the first experience it had was in the physical body looking at this water bottle, right? Mm-hmm. So first one is that conscious self, the present life, waking state. The second, what I asked you to do was take Atma, I was like, now go think of the water bottle, the memory. Now you're traveling to the second state of awareness or consciousness or conscious realm, which is memory, the death state. It doesn't exist anymore. You've already had the experience, so the experience is just there. You are life carrying life to that experience and giving it life. So you are now existing in a very different realm of awareness, realm of consciousness, memory. Then I was like, okay, carry that memory on your back and pull it into the creative space. So you navigated away from memory and into creative and created a whole world for this water bottle, you know, pulling in more experiences that you're aware of. When I said, give it arms and legs, based on what you understand arms and legs to be, you were able to create it out. But when I say something like animation, maybe you made it more animated, you know, so learning how now these three realms also work. So waking, pulling in an experience into going through the conscious space into memory, giving it life there, and then bringing it from memory into the creative state. And then when I ask you to bring it back out and open your eyes, you're like, holy shit, I see this water bottle in a whole new light. You are bringing the light back out. So it's this dance and journey that you have. I call it the conscious dance. And then you start looking at all these deities like Shiva and Brahma and Vishnu and layering it all up. And you're like, oh, it's just psychology. Yeah, these are the awakenings I've been having over the last couple of years and what moved me. So I'm like, yeah, I've got to really spend some time in this space, you know, so get the crazy out of it and keep it really focused on the Dharma, and like make sure that I'm still existing in my truth and not ramping that charge up to a point where no one can understand or connect or communicate with me.
Next thing we know, we can't find you anymore. I tried to call up Terry. Terry's not picking up the phone.
He's like, yeah, he doesn't know how to communicate to anyone now. Everyone's looking at him with a confused face. So again, being aware, meeting awareness where it's at, you know, being able, and that's why I'm so glad I had all these coaching tools, because I have all these ways to explain it and analogies to use. So it's not so difficult. Like, what I just talked you through a deep psychological understanding of the mind, and we picked it up very easy using a water bottle and the form of communication. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I love the way you explain stuff. Like, you're just a genius. Oh my goodness.
Not really. It's honestly, it's just training. If you think, one thing you need to start understanding now is your human body and my human body, we have the same ways. If you can go take yourself on that whole conscious journey, like, I can't explain to a fish, look at a bloody water bottle and do all of that, but I can explain it to you, and you did it, and you did it successfully. You and I are one and the same. So all I'm trying to do is get you to level your conscious awareness up. And then can you imagine the conversations? Do a podcast with you in 10 years' time? Who knows what we'll be talking about? Isn't it nice to be on a wavelength of communication where you can communicate in 10 years' time and be like, yo, what's up?
Yes, I'm mind blown.
You won't be. Give it a while. Keep practicing, keep meditating. You won't be. You'll be, yeah. Because what I found for a long time was, I'm just going to go into turn this into a little therapy session for myself and just open up about it.
I love it.
So, like, one of the things I felt at the very beginning was really lonely, because surely, like, I figured out things and started detaching and realizing and ramping up my level of awareness as best as I could. And you're kind of at the beginning stages of it, when you're still new to it, you're kind of met with two types of energies primarily. Is one who is one type of energy which is very resistant to it and makes you feel as if you're crazy or insane or stupid. Or, you know, and then there's another energy that's resistant to it, which is basically individuals who see you as probably superior, you know, putting that layer over you as if like, oh, his ego is inflamed. He's better than I. He thinks he's better than I. It's not that. And that's these are the two energies I found myself connecting with. And I realized why. And it's because I was so charged up. I was so wired in, and it was so exciting learning this way to operate, that I was completely missing the boat on how to communicate to people. So what was happening is all that resistance kept telling me, oh, maybe I am going mad. Maybe it isn't right. Maybe I am an asshole and I'm just like talking out of my ass and whatever. And so I'm like, that doesn't feel healthy to me, thinking that way. So then I started meditating on why I'm thinking that way. What conclusion did I come to? Oh, I'm just communicating shit that people don't understand yet, or that I can't even, or maybe like they do understand and I'm not communicating it right. And then you start adjusting your communication, and I'm like, oh, now I'm connecting to everybody. So that loneliness started to fade away, because I realized it's not necessarily me being alone or feeling like I'm isolating myself or having to isolate myself to exist in this bliss. I just need to learn how to communicate this. And so if you ever listened to a previous podcast I did, a long one, that was done about a year ago, year and a half ago. I can't remember the exact date. And that was a point where I said I was going to stop taking a bunch of coaching clients and stop working at the rate that I was and stop paying attention to what the hell is going on now with my level of experience and awareness. Like, taking the time out of my experience of life and building this coaching career to actually think about, okay, what do I do with this new information and new energy, this new sense of self that I've gained? Oh, let me spend some time living in it. So all the resources that I had earned and all the places that I've got to, I realized, oh, I can dismantle this. You know, I'll sell my loft. I'll take my business online. I'll work with only a handful of clients. I'll scale back my experience so that I can have more of one. Scale back my current experience that I'm having, that I'm constructing this career and whatnot, and then have a life more, and divert that energy into gaining more experiences physically, as opposed to just constantly being on work mode. And that's when I learned communication, growth, and development, and that's what led me to move to Nelson and start my meditation, practicing the confidence and courage to do that too, alongside my coaching, to even like trust myself to read tarot cards and teach tantric meditations. Like, these are higher, crazy, weird things that don't mesh into into the life that I created on one brand and this brand. So I'm just like, communication is keep building platforms of communication where I'm understood in all aspects, where it's not weird to have someone be like, yeah, I read tarot too, but at the same time, I actually do coaching and I do this and I do this, and helping people understand I'm putting my energy and my truth in everything that I do. So it's makes sense now. This is Terry, hence my name of the meditation studio, Terry's Meditation Studio, hence the coaching. It's Life Coach Terry. Like, I'm not being anyone else but me. I'm not adopting any other doctrine but my truth. Mm-hmm. So henceforth, I moved, the loneliness just dissipated because I just started showing up everywhere.
I wanted to touch on that feeling of loneliness. That was one of my biggest source of pain point as well that I've come to realize. I had this childhood experience, and just like that water bottle experience that you brought me to, I gained the awareness that I have been living my childhood memory of feeling loneliness from being bullied by friends and stuff like that. And I've carried that onto my adulthood, or now. I don't know if I'm considering myself an adult, but...
I called out.
carried up until this point. I had a coaching call with another coach, and he said, what is an emotion or a feeling that you're most afraid of? And the one that came to my mind right away was loneliness. And I was shocked. I was like, did I just say that? Whoa, like, I didn't even know that. I'm just wondering, when you talk about feeling lonely because you couldn't communicate with the audience, even though all it takes is meeting them where they are, I guess.
Yeah, they'll think of it like this. When, especially in children, and thank you for sharing your experience with loneliness too when you were younger. Like, you'll notice the reason why you're lonely is because you feel as if there's no one that you can communicate to. And the people that exist around you, they're either restricting you from communication or not letting you communicate, or don't know how, literally, there's constantly just, they don't know who you are and what you're about. So there's kind of that awkwardness of how do we approach, what identity is there? So when we're not communicating, we are essentially going to be lonely. Communicating our feelings, our truths, how we feel, you know, even when we're existing in spaces where you feel like there's no room to have the conversation that you need to have. You know, that was very, in my life growing up as well, you know, money was always a thing that we had to figure out. So allowing feelings to come up then, and allowing feelings of isolation and loneliness, just had to be put on hold. You know, we're talking about putting food and bread on the table, bread and water and all of that, you know, taking care of our basic resources. So, you know, those isolations and feelings, they were completely bypassed. So they grow and grow and grow. And then when you start building up resources, you realize, why am I still feeling lonely and isolated? And then it's like, oh, I just haven't realized how to talk to people. I hadn't realized that I could. You know, these are all things I had to figure out. I'm not saying it's the same for everybody, but most of the time when I talk to people about who say they feel lonely, it's because, A, they don't feel like there's any points of entry for them to actually exist and step into life. All right, that's right. And so communicating becomes, okay, I'm going to step into this experience and I'm going to show up for it, but I've got to communicate it so that they recognize me. So they understand and who I am, so that we can progress communication and develop it. Like I said, 10 years from now, if we continue our own individual experiences of truth, when we communicate, we'll have such an interesting conversation.
Oh, I look forward to 10 years later.
Let's keep it shorter. 5 years, 2 years, who cares, yeah. Man? Just when the energy feels called, respond.
I wanted to shift a little bit of a direction. So what is tantric meditation? Is
yeah,
that right?
Perfect time.
Yeah, perfect
time. good shifting. Oh, geez. You need to start interviewing a lot of people. You're great at this. So tantric, again, let's lighten the mood with tantra. So tantra meditation. Tantra. Let me tell you how I got into tantra or tantric meditation. Okay. It's all... So how do I explain tantra? This is the hardest things for me to ever talk about because it's so... inside the experience. Okay, so tantra, from my understanding and my experience, is basically existing and stepping into one's own truth and then operating in that fashion. So can you imagine stepping into your truth and then getting laid? Like, it's gonna feel amazing, right? And then stepping into your truth and eating to fuel your body for what it needs, the necessities and the core the core concept of what you put into your body to feed it, like treating the body literally as a temple. Imagine a life after you've really figured out so much about yourself, you've connected with a transcendental, you've connected transcendentally with something, and you come back into your body and like, oh, life is amazing. And there's things I've got to do now. And there's even the basic thing is eating becomes a pleasurable act. So I always say Tantra is what life is post-transcendental experience, post-enlightenment experience. Probably said that wrong. But so when that happens is you start realizing all these different spiritual tricks that we have, you know. Your level of intelligence really starts growing because, for example, I'll be listening to classical music, and this is going to sound insane, but I feel as if I can feel their pulses in my brain to really quieten down the senses that much to actually consciously figure out, like, listen to the brain and how it's operating. Like, I can't remember the classical piece, but there was a triangle in it, and I could feel, like, as soon as the triangle got hit, the instrument, where in my brain it was activating, and I was like, whoa, the brain is an amazing tool. So that's like a tantric meditation. It's like learning what things you can do with the body. And then I was listening to this other piece, and I realized why I love listening to the violin so much. So I'm listening to this classical piece, and I must admit this was a cannabis-friendly meditation that I was in when I experienced this. And I've been learning how to activate it kind of just without cannabis and into my meditations. Is I was listening to this music, and I kid you not, and this is going to sound awkward for anyone, my family, if ever they listen to it, but I was like, felt like I was orgasming completely out, like through my chest and out of my torso. Wow. Like, it was intense. I was like, this feel like my, is almost like my heart chakra just came.
Wow. That is amazing.
Yeah, so then I was like, what other energy centers can we activate? So I dosed up, like rolled another joint, smoked it, and I was like, right, let's see what the truth can do. And let's see what the third eye can do. Let's see what the crown can do. And next thing you know, I'm like pulling in energy from root all the way up to crown and just shooting it out my head and down my body. Like, so the level of excitement you can imagine one is experiencing in this state, you know, you're realizing what this body is capable of doing. And I'm just in meditation at this point. Wow. So Tantra is, you can imagine, it's quite the experience. It's all about like the pleasures of like think about it. If you've really connected with a depth of understanding and awareness of where you feel as if life is this beautiful, blissful experience, and that yes, although there are troubles, you know, you have abilities and ways to kind of ease a lot of that trouble, so that if you're one person doing it, you should encourage others in your network to bring more energy and self and truth into the world. So they basically, one beacon of light, like fire, can light up another beacon of light and another beacon of light, and they can go on. So we're all now working together in a happy and healthy environment because we're lighting each other up. That's Tantra. And unfortunately, what's happened is because obviously sex on Tantra or tantric exercises, they're being taught as Tantra. And most of those exercises are like all these like Kama Sutra. There's like Tantra 101. But that's only looking at one of our human needs, like sex. And of course, if you're experiencing life in a post-transcendental state, sex is going to feel great, obviously, because you're operating differently. You're operating in your truth. Mm. So when you realize that does it with your connections to other people, your food, your meditations, everything you do becomes enlightened. Mm. There's Tantra. That's what Tantra is about. You're existing in your truths. And then a Tantra class or a Tantra event that I host is basically me talking about that experience and encouraging others to figure out what they need to do to show up for themselves.
I can only imagine. I think sex is something so intimate and not talked about. And I don't know why there's still a lot of taboo around it. But I feel that like bringing your truth or being in your truth and doing that during sex, like that's a really empowering experience for all human beings, I feel like.
Oh, incredibly. Like, and you'll notice most of the traumas that we carry, most of the difficult experience that we have in life are to do with how we see ourselves and connect with ourselves sexually. One of the things I learned in marketing was like, I was like the evil behind marketing. I see it like this: seeping into your vulnerabilities to reshape your desires. So one way, and the way you seep into people's vulnerabilities is you start looking at their motivations. Where is their esteem tied to? And you'll notice most of us who are struggling to show up for our lives, there's something connected to our basic needs and a basic mode of operation that is not in fulfillment. Like if we're not eating right, if we're not taught how to eat right, we're not looking after ourselves properly, if we're not... we're not fucking right. We don't know how to use our bodies. We're not dancing. We're not expressive. We don't know. We have such a disconnect with the body that we're in. That's going to cause a million problems already, let alone all the other problems you got to deal with, like surviving and making money and getting a roof over your head and taking care of a family and all of that. If the basics aren't even covered, yeah, it's going to get hard. So when existing in your truth and stepping into it, it's like, right, no, I actually have to listen. You know, I have to pay attention to the shit that's coming out of my ass, you know? Like, is it even healthy? Is what I'm putting in my body good for me? Mm-hmm. And then you start realizing what moving your life forward is all about. You're like, yeah, you start with the basics and then you build up.
I want to touch on, I think you're kind of going into the topic about exploring our bodies or feeling connected to our body. And I want to ask you about that in terms of, I think a lot of the times when we talk about our potential, we talk about our mental capability, the intelligence. But I think when we refer to our potential, almost we think of the mind. I'm just wondering, from your perspective, from your point of view, what is realizing our true potential? And how does it connect to just the mind? Or is it like our whole body? Or
yeah, well, connecting to your true potential. Okay, so now let's say you're existing in your truth, mm-hmm. right? You're your truer self. You've learned how to operate. You've learned how to communicate. Your potential is only just getting started from that point, because you're learning right now how to navigate your life. You're knowing about the life that you need to sustain. You know, you've got this flame that you've just ignited and it's running. So the first mode of operation, the first level of potential is building a life where you can keep that flame sustained. Mm. You know, potential number one is operating in the most blissful state that you can possibly exist in. So once you've got that going, it's all about, right, how can now I do something to lift the energy around me to the next state, you know? And your potential gets sown into the way you live your life and how you experience. And now you're thinking about growing and expanding your experience of life, because you can't just, like I always say, once you get nestled into a space that's comfortable and you're within your means and you're loving it and you're blissful, right? Your light can only shine so bright, and you'll notice there's only a certain realm that you can play within. So if you want new experiences, you're going to have to branch out. So everything starts becoming about pushing your truth further out and as far as it can reach. Mm-hmm. So so expanding your truth out. So I know with life coaching, the only way to get it to the next level, well, not the only way, but the better way to get to the next level, the way that I'm going to feel comfortable doing it, is by igniting the meditation stuff and having that energy feed my coaching, because I feel it's more valuable doing that. Or I can do all the fake shit and start selling all this. Like, there was the one time I was trying it where I was putting on a role and I was pretending to be this life coach and this motivational speaker and this type of person, and, you know, like, feeding it, giving into all the BS about what a life coach should be, just to sell a course and start marketing and get a number of clients or whatever. And I realized, growing that way, I'm not coming from within now. I'm letting everything out here decide my direction forward. Now the world ahead of me is in charge of my potential. You know, they choose whether they accept me or not. They choose whether to embrace me or not. And the only way I can play is if I play within that realm. Do as I'm exactly told. That does not sound like good potential to me. That doesn't show the potential to me. That's just basically, how well can you conform? How well can you deliver? How well can you imitate? How well can you give people what they blindly seem to want? So I decided, well, it's time to see what I can provide. What can I contribute to this experience called life? You know, how can I create a life that I really enjoy living and I really want to be in? There's potential, another level of potential. How can I get people to show up for themselves? Another level of potential. And you start expanding it, and all it is about conscious play. This is Tantra, you know. You realize how well you can play with yourself, and then you start looking at, well, how can I play with this world? You know, chakras work in the same way. The first potential is your connection, so root chakra, your connection to the earth, what you consume through the body and what the body provides the earth, that beautiful cycle of life and death, that your roots, nourishment, all of that stuff. then your sacral chakra, which is, you know, that sex organ, that play you're now navigating through the world physically. That's your next point of potential. Your third point of potential. Now, what can you do with your gut instincts intact when you know how to operate physically from the root, you know how to play from the sacral, and now you're storing that energy in your gut. So you've got so much self-trust now. Yeah, what can you do with that potential? Okay, let's carry that up now to the heart and what you desire. What would you like to see in the world? Carrying your potential up to there. Now let's bring some truth in it. You know, the truth that you've experienced is the next level of chakra. Let's bring that into the world. Next level of potential. Third eye, insight, overview over your experience of life, understanding every experience, detachment, so that you have complete objectivity. You're operating in a very present state. Level of potential just increased. Then you go into the crown where you're like, okay, what energy can I pull in that's so far beyond, you know, what exists in this physical world? How far can I push the limits of my potential? Mm. And then you're just going.
So it's just like limitless.
I'm telling you, man, this... exactly what Maslow was trying to present in his study, The Hierarchy of Needs, exactly the chakra system. Mm. Same thing. It's a very different approach, but they both align. And then you start looking, when you start accessing spiritual potential, I can't even put that shit into words yet. Like, that is, it almost gets, I even get emotional with it because it's that empowering and that freeing. And this is where people start either, you know, liking it or like, okay, we've gone too far. We've crossed the threshold in terms of what sane and insane is. And again, it comes down to something that I can't effectively communicate yet.
I was about to ask, but you said you can't communicate. So, oh my gosh. Please reach out to me when you can explain the spiritual potential.
What's that? Let's get people all on the same page with one part first. And that's the thing I've noticed as well. One example of the spiritual potential I can give you, because I feel like I can explain it, is being able to connect with the right people now. Like, almost to the point where it feels like I'm inviting them in without even trying. And you're starting to see like the beautiful divinity and everything, like the beautiful plan. Like, you're literally seeing your creation creating and unfolding in front of your eyes. Like, that's probably the best way I can explain it, where you can see all the work and the intricate design all at play, like a violin playing. That's why I love the violin. It's like perfect. You know, it's kind of like a spiritual composition. Life is.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know I could get to that level, but yes. That's what it feels like. It's like you're composing life. It's stunning.
So from what you're saying, inviting the right people into your space without even trying to. I'm a little bit curious because I think this is maybe something that I'm struggling with. I think a part of me is like, well, I want to be welcoming and I want to be compassionate and understanding of all human beings. So should I be welcoming everybody, including, you know, like, the negative or the toxic people? I don't know. Like, I don't know how to navigate and still, you know, like being a compassionate being that I want to be. So how do you navigate that in terms of, let's say you consider certain people are toxic or negative to your life? Do you still welcome them? Like, how do you invite or not invite them into your space?
I think it's just recognizing where someone is at in terms of their awareness now. It's not whether someone is negative or positive. When you start realizing what the human is capable of, like, even in my worst enemy, like, some members, I'll be honest, with some members in my family, some really close, intimate connections that I have, there's a lot of difficulty and strife in someone's experience of life where there's just no communication. There's, you know, it's, I always say it's always a dance between light and darkness. How dark is someone and how light is someone? And it's about making sure that one doesn't like blind the other and the other one doesn't consume the other. And so that communication and recognizing that space, so I'm like, okay, you know, this person, we can carry the conversation here. But, and I've noticed, like, for example, what just happened in this podcast, look at where we started our conversation. And then an hour and 15 minutes later, we got really spiritually deep. Why? It's because the communication is really easy. I'm showing up in my truth, and that's encouraging you to show up in your truth. And you'll notice we had to reveal levels of vulnerability and truth in order to get to the confidence and the openness to actually present something even more vulnerable to me, which is the spiritual concepts and the things that I'm feeling. And being able to trust myself to communicate to them, and you're not going to get scared away and be like, oh, fuck, I just hired someone who's crazy for this podcast, you know? nutter on, you know? So it's kind of like allowing the conscious dance to occur. And then when you really, because you can just sense it in that point. And this is, again, some of that's difficult to understand, difficult me to communicate, is you start talking and I always say, how easy is it for me? Like, I always, imagine it like a thread, like you're able to pull on a thread and you're still wanting to pull on that thread of information that's coming out of me. So whatever your intention is, I've just got to trust that as long as I'm being truthful and open and honest, and I've always operated that way in my life, then whether it's negative intent or positive intent, anything that you present to try to flip or turn, when people meet me, it's either going to agree with you or not. So trusting in yourself is how you get to that point of understanding negative or healthy or positive or negative people. Like, bring a negative person into your space, you'll recognize it very quickly, because you're like, how true can I be here? How open can I be here?
So
you know, what questions am I being asked? Which direction am I being led in? Like, you'll see there's some interviews or there's some people I've questioned and maybe they're just doing to challenge, but like, they keep challenging me. Like, where are you coming from? What is this? And what about this? And what about this? And throwing cup. But then you're like, bring it. It's good. The more my beliefs are tested, the better I'm going to get at shattering that belief or growing it. You know, I don't think we should resist any sort of energy in our lives. I think we should invite it all to play, and we should be able to learn how to be consistent in every single one of them. Just enough listening to chakras or our energy centers enough to know, you know, again, the second chakra is how you navigate through the experience of the world, like through it. That's like the second phase of your potential, second phase of your development. So by the time you're getting to the point of sensing it, like when you get to the third eye level of potential, perhaps, or truth, or your heart, you're already a master at reading people and knowing who to attract. You'll notice people who are more open at the heart fall in love quite easily. They connect with people very well and like can really play at a level of physical interaction too. You know, going up to a person and being able to strike up a conversation and be very true and honest and open. But like when you're at the third eye level, for example, or you're operating at a crown level where you're meeting energies walking down the street. And like I said, I've been doing deep enough meditations to start looking at where my brain seems to be operating, like what electric pulses are going on over here, to really listen to the brain at that level. You know, it's hard to do, but now and again, you can just feel it. And then as if I can do that within, how far can I tune my senses outside, like the physical senses in this world? Training ears, eyes to capture certain micro movements and connections in people. I may be wrong, but that's how communication can verbalize. Like, you know, you can dance with that energy. If you get a certain sense, you know, respond to that sense in the way you sense it, and let's see how the conversation goes. It's, again, this is another thing where it comes more from within. And maybe again, in 5 years when we talk, I'll be able to better communicate this.
A few years ago, when I was a bit younger, not that I'm old at all, but I would always feel like I would observe myself constantly seeking for advice. And then it came to the point where all the advice just sounds the same and I'm not taking in any of it. And then I think that's when I started to realize that I actually needed to listen to myself and letting my inner guidance give me not a script, but certain ways to navigate through the world and navigate through people and different relationships and different energies. Because for a big part of my life, my biggest struggle was, I guess, not in the sense of negative people, but people that were also in pain themselves. The only way that they could express themselves or project themselves in the world is through pain and hurting other people. For me, like, that was my biggest struggle. And for a long time, I told myself to avoid anywhere where negative energies were. But I think recently, I guess with the meditation that practice that I've been keeping up with, it's just kind of making me realizing that it's not negative or positive. Like you said, I think saying it in dark and light, and it's like a balancing act between dark and light, and showing up with compassion and not letting what's external to be the condition. It's just showing up unconditionally with your truth.
Yeah. I have one of my favorite life coaching tips. I told you I'm going to throw a few of these in. Is basically navigate through the world and start assessing people if you need to assess them on a sense of like truth and untruth. Are people restricting you or people embracing you? You know, and you'll notice if you just follow the direction of embracing each other, you'll start realizing your truth just shines more and more. And those who once were restricting you, you'll find that they'll feel restricted in accessing you at some point, and knowing that they've got a lot of work to do. Like, that's how light works. Like, if you're shining bright, and the brighter you shine, yeah, other energy is going to have to show up in order to connect with you, you know? Like, you just always recognize the level of development that you're at. Don't get mad at your ignorance. Don't get mad at, like, not knowing. Like, every time I talk, people are like, how do I get more like you? I was like, by being more like you. Simple answer. And so get into that mode and just accepting, like, whatever, your mistakes are going to happen. That's how we learn. That's one thing, you know, before even spiritual stuff, my dad taught me. He was like, just make your mistakes, but learn from them. So once you do that and you realize, yeah, well, that person made me go into this direction. Now I know when I'm playing with that around energy that makes me feel like that, to move away from it, to not even accept it as part of my life. If you're going to make me feel inferior to you, no, I reject that. I'm reconstructing a version of reality here, and that does not compute with it. Fuck off. but then like, you'll meet another energy, be like, wow, you know, but this is the key thing. If you've met an energy that embraces you, give that energy a moment in time to enlighten you. Give them time to share something that can really pull you through, because they're embracing you because they see your potential just as much as you see theirs. You then exist in a relationship, and the conscious dance become guru and student. Student becomes guru, and guru becomes student. Like, it's a constant playing field. And even younger energies, like, you watch kids, and I learn so much. I'm teaching a bunch of kids how to meditate now, which is a dream come true for me. And these kids are asking the most amazing questions, and they're checking, making me check myself. And I'm like, okay, tell me more. What's the experience? And just learning from these kids is just incredible.
Kids are, like, so brilliant. I love kids.
Yeah, you got to catch them before they get taught, like, this is the way mm-hmm. of the world, and this is how you have to be. Before they get to that point, that's the point of, that's like gold. And you want to encourage that until the rest of their life, you know, to decide what the world needs to be in order for this person or me to exist in bliss and happiness and joy and light, to make life an experience worth coming back to over and over and over and over again.
I want to kind of finish us off with fill in the blank. I imagine a world blank.
True.
I like that. Everything that we spoke of, truth.
Yeah. True. I think it's mm-hmm. the simplest way. It's the only way.
And I have one more question for you. I lied.
Go.
If you knew that you were going to die within the next 6 months, and aside from spending all of the time you have with your family, your friends, your loved ones, all the people that you love, what would be some things that you would do for yourself?
This is, to me, that question is, well, I'm doing that now. I'm doing that, like, the family, everything that I existed. Literally, there's a text, I can't remember the name of it, but Osho was the one who really, if you ever heard of Osho, you know, forget the cult stuff, but just think mm-hmm. of him as a character on his own and what he studied. And he studied this ancient Vedic text, which talks about, what was this? Like we're, the moment we're born, we're already dying, essentially. Like, we're dying. So you can say you could die in 6 months. You can say you're dying in 80 years. You can believe whatever you want, but regardless, is you are going through life toward death. So every day is that day. So the one thing I do is I check in with my body. What does my body need? And then I check in with my mind. What does my mind need? How do I need to continue a fulfilling experience in life? And this is where balance comes into play, because as long as you're always maintaining balance in your life, you can die now, you can die tomorrow, you'll realize you're always on the truest path. So when I connect with my family and my loved ones, when I'm doing that, I'm trying my best to connect as much as I possibly can and show up as much as I possibly can with all the awareness that I have and truth that I have. But then there's the other side of it as well. Like, again, coming from that working class background, one of the narratives that my family haven't experienced is the narrative that I'm creating right now. So by me living this life and building this, it's a way for me, we're connecting as a family. Like, we're communicating in ways that we could never communicate before. because we have so many new and exciting experiences to bring to the table. You said this at the beginning of this podcast or somewhere in it when you listen to it back. You said something about showing up and I just wanted to add to that, like what you bring to the table, what you're bringing to show up in your life. What are you... and it's kind of like when you connect with your family, it's like a check-in, like, look at where I've taken this life. Look at where I've taken this experience you gave me. Look at where I've taken this experience you were part of. And then it made it so much easier just to live. You know, you don't worry about death anymore. Die today, die tomorrow, die 6 months from now. It's not about what I have to do. It's about what I'm doing and sustaining that right to the very end.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Inner Leader podcast. If you liked this episode as much as I did, please spread the love and share it with your friends and family on social media to support our guest and the show. They will appreciate your incredible love on this beautiful day. Thank you for being an amazing listener on our show. Please give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help us grow our community. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you haven't already. You can also send us a DM on Instagram at The Inner Leader to introduce yourself, ask questions, and make future requests for the show. We welcome you with big hugs always. And before you go, make sure you share this episode with your friends and family. Spread as much love as you can, because the more you give, the more you receive. And remember, today is the day. I love you. Until next time.